Jesus. That Jesus placed upon two sets of brothers. And he called them to be fishers of men. And they left everything and followed him. And we looked at what that meant for them and what it means for us. Now, Andrew and Simon Peter, James and John, the sons of Zebedee, left all to follow him. A little clarification from last week, though. While it is true, I was wrong in one thing here. It's James and John are related to the Lord, sons of Zebedee. However, Mary, the mother of Jesus, her name was Mary, but her sister's name was Salome, not Mary. There was another Mary, though, that was connected to his apostles, to that of James and Joseph. But the mother of James and John was Salome. And so that's just a little clarification for that. They both didn't have the same name, which I alluded to erroneously last week. Anyway, we saw how important the choice is to follow Christ and what that means and what that meant for those two sets of brothers and what it means for us today. This morning, I want us to examine and look at verses. If you have your Bible, turn to Mark chapter 1. We're going to look at verses 21 through 34. We're going to examine how Jesus first began to demonstrate, to exercise, if you would, his authority in the region of Galilee. And as I've said before, Mark does not write in a strict chronological order. So you can't go, and that's the way most of the Gospels are. Now, we could do a chronological study through the Gospels, and that takes a while to do, to put it together that way. But for the most part, the Gospel writers did not write in a chronological order. At least Mark didn't. I think Luke does, because Luke, he tells us from the very beginning, I'm setting these things down for you, Theophilus, that you might know what happened. And so he puts them in order. And I think Matthew does as well. But Mark doesn't. Mark is not, he's not concerned about step by step by step by step, chronological-wise, time-wise. Mark is concerned about getting across to his readers, to his audience, and specifically those in Rome, Christians in Rome. He's concerned about showing that Jesus Christ is the Son of God and what that means. So here, again, he's not speaking strictly in a chronological order. It is now about, last week I related, it's about when he called the four, the two sets of brothers, it was about April of 28 AD. It is now May of 28 AD. Toward the latter part of April is when he called the two sets of brothers to follow him. And now we're on up to May of 28 AD, when these particular episodes in the life of Christ occur. Jesus begins to assert, demonstrate, if you want, his authority. And the first thing that we see here in Mark chapter 1 is he begins to demonstrate his authority through teaching. And he takes those two sets of brothers with him. If Mark begins here in pick up with verse 21. Again, as you can't see, this is chronological. Mark's not saying it happened boom, 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 boom. You can think so, but that's not the way Mark is writing. Several days have passed since then. They went into Capernaum, and immediately, notice how Mark loves that word, immediately. He's not dilly-dallying. And immediately on the Sabbath, when in Hebrew we call the Shabbat, he entered the synagogue and to teach. Now that little word in New American Standard, if you'll read the New American Standard, which I encourage you to, has a began there, and that's in italics. And the reason why it's in italics is because the writers, the translators have inserted that so it makes more sense English-wise. So he said, and began to teach. But literally in the Greek, it says they went into Capernaum, and immediately on the Sabbath, he entered the synagogue and to teach. So he's taking the two sets of brothers with him, Peter and Andrew, James and John, his cousins, with him into the synagogue. And Jesus has a purpose of going into the synagogue. Not just to go in and to hear the instruction, the teaching there, but his purpose is to go in himself to teach. Now think about that for a moment. Here Jesus goes into the synagogue in Capernaum to teach. Now, Capernaum was the hometown of Andrew and Simon Peter. Capernaum was located, it's nobody even knows where the site is nowadays, today, but it was located on the northwest shore of the Sea of Galilee. And it was a fishing town. Now, John tells us that they were from Andrew and Peter, and then they were from Bethsaida. Well, there's not a contradiction there. Bethsaida was like a suburb of Capernaum, smaller than Capernaum. And so they go into Capernaum, Andrew and Simon Peter's hometown. It's a fishing town. In fact, Capernaum means, in Hebrew, it means village of Nahum. And the Lord makes this place, Capernaum, as you're going to see in studying out the Gospel of Mark, that the Lord makes this place the center of his ministry in the region of Galilee, of his Galilean ministry. And it's now the Sabbath. And so Jesus and the four of them go into the synagogue. And Mark tells us, immediately, he goes into the synagogue to teach. So Jesus had a purpose in going there. And I think it was not only just to teach those in the synagogue, but I think it was to teach Peter and Andrew and James and John. This is his first, what we read in the Capernaum area, his first teaching. And his first teaching that they would see, The synagogue, then you have to see this, the synagogue was a place in Jesus' day where instruction and teaching were carried out. Not the temple. The temple was used for worship. That's where the people went to worship and to offer sacrifices. But they didn't get instruction and teaching there. You would think that the priest would be, you know, would be instructing and teaching them. That wasn't that way. The people went to the synagogue. Specifically men, not women. The men would go to the synagogue to learn, to be taught, to be instructed. The Jews believed in what they had set up was that the temple was in Jerusalem. Not all the Jews lived in Jerusalem. So how are they going to be instructed? How are they going to be taught? Well, they established synagogues during the intertestamental period before Jesus was born. They established and built synagogues. And they put it out. They made a rule that, and all the Jews would know this, that if there were 10 Jewish families in an area, there would be a synagogue. That's why when you read about in Paul's epistles and in Acts, is that when he went to Philippi, I think it was the Philippi. Anyway, the place where he saw Lydia, they went to the river or the shore, and the Jews were gathered there. And the reason why they did that is because there were not 10 families of Jews in that area. So they didn't have a synagogue. They only had a synagogue if there was, at least there had to be 10 families. But if there were 10 families of Jews there, they must have a synagogue. And the synagogue was used for instruction and teaching to be carried out. Now, in the synagogue, they had an elder. They had a ruling elder, an elderly man, a ruling elder who would see over the synagogue, make sure things ran properly, and specifically on the Shabbat, on the Sabbath. But here's the thing. They did not have a certain preacher or teacher, a designated preacher or teacher. The ruler of the synagogue, a scribe or one of the teachers would come in. Usually it was a scribe, would come in, and the ruler of the synagogue would decide, would designate who was to teach. But not with Jesus. Mark tells us that he went into the synagogue with the four of them. And Mark specifically tells us he went in to teach. What that is telling us is that Jesus didn't ask permission to teach. He didn't ask the ruler of the synagogue if he could teach. His purpose in going there was to teach. Now here's the thing. And why wouldn't he ask permission, or why would the ruler of the synagogue not designate, say, him to teach? Well, one, we know that Jesus was not a scribe. He wasn't, per se, a rabbi. But yet, he went there to teach. And he went in and taught. And notice again, Mark uses that word immediately. So again, Mark is telling us that this is significant. Now here's the thing. As we go on here, look at this. He entered the synagogue to teach. And we know that he did teach because of what it says, verse 23. They were amazed at his teaching. They were amazed at his teaching. For he was teaching them as having authority and not as the scribes. Now notice, Mark doesn't tell us what Jesus taught. That's not his purpose. That's not Mark's purpose. That's not his point. And it's not that Mark doesn't care about what Jesus taught. That's not his purpose. His purpose is to relate the reaction to his teaching, not what he taught. He doesn't want to center on what he taught. Mark is centering upon here the reaction of his teaching. And notice it. The disciples, this includes the four, it includes Peter and Andrew, it includes James and John, but it's also all those in the synagogue. They were amazed at his teaching. Why? Because he taught by authority. That's what Mark means here. For he was teaching them as having authority. He exercised, he asserted, he demonstrated his authority. It wasn't Jesus, and what Mark is getting across to us, brothers and sisters, it wasn't Jesus, just his charisma, his personality that they were amazed at. They were amazed by his teaching, by how he taught. That's what Mark says. That he taught with authority. Now, what does that mean? He did not teach like the scribes. You see, the people were amazed because the scribes would never teach that way, that as he did. Now, how do we know how he taught? Mark, he doesn't really give us a clue. But we do know that from reading later on, from reading the Sermon on the Mount, is a good example of that, how he taught. The scribes would quote a great teacher, another great scribe. They would quote another rabbi, say Gamaliel, or especially they like two specifically, Hillel and Shammai. They would quote those the most. Hillel says, Shammai says, and they would never quote themselves. They would never say, I'm telling you this. I'm teaching you this. I'm instructing you this. This is what I say. This is what I want you to do. This is how I say that you should act, how you should behave. This is how I say you should live. The scribes would never say that. And the scribes would talk about God. They would talk about Yahweh in a distant way. Jesus, on the other hand, did not teach like that. Jesus didn't say, you know, brothers, Rabbi Hillel, he says this. No, Jesus said, you have heard it said, but I say to you this and this. That's how Jesus taught. He taught with authority. He had the authority. He demonstrated the authority. He asserted and exercised authority. The scribes never did that. Nowhere do you read in the scriptures or anywhere else about a scribe or a rabbi in Jewish teaching that they were amazed at his teaching. How many people are amazed today, do you think? If we were in their place, would we have been amazed at his teaching? I think that we would. Problem with many today, people today, that they're not amazed. They don't know what amazement is. You ever wake up in the morning and see a beautiful sunrise? Or at night, see one beautiful sunset? You ever amazed at that? Many people aren't. They go through their lives walking, working. They go all through their lives not paying attention to anything, practically, but what they're doing. And not looking around them. But my, oh my, if many people would look around them, maybe how amazed they would be of what God has created. And that's a wonderful thing. And should be amazed. But here's one who came and taught, and they were amazed at what he said. People today, part of the problem is, and why we don't see people in the assembly and gathering together as we should, is because they don't know how to be amazed at what God has done, at what God has said, and what His Word says. Dr. Strauss once was preaching about this, and he looked out over us in the chapel, and he said, "Do you know what amazement is? What it is to be amazed?" And he looked out, and he would say, kind of sarcastically, "Say, well, I can see it in your eyes that you don't. Now you can go back to sleep. But you need to learn what amazement is." And that's what many people today need to know. They need to learn how to be amazed. And I dare say if people will get into God's Word and to learn of Christ and about who He is, and this is what Mark is saying, that it would change them. And they would be amazed. Imagine that. They never had heard anyone teach like Jesus taught. Because He taught with and had authority. He didn't teach like others taught. He didn't quote others. He said, "I am telling you this. I am saying this. I say this. And how and why could he do that? Because his father gave him that authority. That's what he said. All authority has been given to me. Now, brothers and sisters, that authority is still his. It's still his. Not mankind's. I agree with Brother Paul McReynolds when he says, see that Jesus taught with self-authenticating authority. He didn't need the other quotations. He didn't need other people to stand behind what he said. He himself was the self-authenticating authority. But not only that, but now notice what happens here. The second thing, how he demonstrates his authority. Notice what happens next here. There's a confrontation. The people have a tendency to think that when Jesus was tempted by Satan, that ended it all. And Satan was done with him. Satan had lost. But Satan never gave up. Did he? He had other means. And right here we see that confrontation. Look at what happens here. Just then, there was a man in their synagogue with an unclean spirit, that is, an evil spirit, a demon. And he cried out, saying, What business do we have with each other, Jesus of Nazareth? Now notice here, when Jesus went into the synagogue to teach, and he did teach, and they were amazed at his authority, Jesus didn't go in there and say, I'm Jesus Christ of Nazareth. I'm Jesus of Nazareth. I just want you to know that, and I'm here to teach you. And I want you to be amazed at my teaching. So I'm here to teach you. What Mark is telling us here, brothers and sisters, is that they didn't know who he was. That's what it's saying. Just then there was a man in the synagogue. He had an evil spirit. He cries out, what business do we have with each other, Jesus of Nazareth? Have you come to destroy us? Now, that's a question mark, but literally in the Greek, you can look at that as a statement that the evil spirit is saying, you have come to destroy us. Not a question mark. No, notice what it says. He says, I know who you are, the Holy One of God. Right away, see, a man with an evil spirit, he knows who he is right off the bat. So you see, there's a confrontation here now between the forces of darkness, the forces of evil, and good. And it's interesting that from the early start of his ministry, he encounters evil beings. Reminds us of what Paul said in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 12. That we wrestle not just with earthly beings, with earthly forces, but we wrestle against supernatural forces. Forces of evil. And we still do. Well, this evil spirit knows who Jesus is from the time he enters the synagogue. What's that remind you of? Now remember, see, James and John are here. They see this. What did James write later on in his epistle? Remember what he wrote? You believe that God is one. You do well. The demons also believe and shudder. That's what's happening. See? Right here. This evil spirit knows who Jesus is from the time he entered the synagogue. He says, the Holy One of God. What he's saying is, we know who you are, the Holy One of God, the Messiah. And you've come to destroy us. And that's exactly what happens. Because what does Jesus do? Look at what it says here. Jesus didn't parley with him. He didn't, you know, say, let's have some negotiations here. No, notice what it says in verse 25. And Jesus rebuked him. Strong word there. And Jesus rebuked him, saying, be quiet and come out of him. Now, Jesus commands the evil spirit, the demon, to be silent and to come out of the man. That's exactly what happened. Now we see the result of this. But here's the thing. When it says, Jesus said, be quiet and come out of him. Literally in the Greek, what Jesus said is, be silent. And come out of him. I like what Mark Moore says concerning this. This was not, you must not see this. This was not an exorcism. Jesus, simply on the authority of his word, commanded the demon, the evil spirit, to leave, and he did. The point of the story is not demonology. The point of the story is what Mark is getting across is the authority of Jesus. And again, notice the result. Look at this. Jesus rebuked him, saying, be silent and come out of him. Throwing him into convulsions, the unclean spirit, the evil spirit, cried out with a loud voice and came out of him. Notice the result, verse 27. First, they were amazed at the authority he demonstrated at his teaching. Now, look what. They were all amazed, so that they debated among themselves, saying, what is this? A new teaching? Notice. What is it? A new teaching with authority? He commands even the unclean spirits, the evil spirit, and they obey him. Notice that? Second time, they were all amazed. They didn't understand. In fact, they were shocked. It was as if they were struck by lightning. Nothing like this had ever happened. A new teaching with authority. And not only that, he commands an evil spirit to come out, and it does. What is with this? And then notice verse 28. Immediately, the news about him spread everywhere into all the surrounding district of Galilee. You see the result there? And again, Mark uses that favorite word of his, immediately. And again, the people are amazed. I like what Mark Moore says concerning this. The crowd is shocked. Not by his deed, but by the power of his words. The deed serves to validate the word, not the other way around. So the word spreads concerning Jesus. Why? Because of his authority. And who he is. So then,
Jesus and the four disciples go to Simon Peter's house. And again, Mark uses that word immediately. And immediately after they came out of the synagogue, they came into the house of Simon and Andrew with James and John. Now Simon's mother-in-law was lying sick with a fever, and immediately, there's that word again, they spoke to Jesus about her. And he came to her and raised her up, taking her by the hand, and the fever left her, and she waited on them. So word spreads concerning Jesus, what we read in verse 28 there. And immediately, used two times in the text, Jesus now demonstrates his authority not only by his teaching, his casting out an evil spirit, but now he demonstrates his authority by his healing power. James and John, Peter and Andrew here, what it says, they spoke to Jesus about her. They must have known by what happened in the synagogue that, maybe this guy can do something. Because they spoke to him about Peter's mother-in-law, that she was ill with the fever. In fact, the text tells us that she was burning up. She had a burning fever. She could have maybe even been dying. Edersheim says in his book, In the Life and Times of Jesus, this is interesting. The Talmud gives this disease precisely the same name, burning fever, and the Talmud prescribes for it a magical remedy. And here's the magical remedy. Can you believe this? Of which the principal part was to tie a knife, wholly of iron, and it had to be an iron knife, to tie a knife, wholly of iron, by a braid of hair to a thorn bush. Okay? You take a knife, wholly made of iron, an iron knife, and you take a braid of hair, and you tie that to a thorn bush. And then you were to repeat on excessive days, Exodus chapter 3, verses 2 and 3. Okay? So first day, Exodus chapter 3, verse 2. Second day, Exodus chapter 3, verse 3. Third day, verse 4, if you're still living. And finally, verse 5. Then after that, the thorn bush was to be cut down while they pronounced a certain magical formula over it. And then the person's fever was supposed to go away. And the Jews actually practiced that and believed that. Instead of relying on who? Instead of thinking about Yahweh, relying on a magic incantation. Well, it's based on Scripture, though. You go back to Exodus chapter 3, verses 2, 3, 4, and 5. And each day, you recite, while you're there at that thorn bush, with the knife and the braid of hair tied to it, you recite those verses. And that's supposed to take care of it. But notice what happens here. Jesus was told about her. Jesus came to Peter's mother-in-law. He raised her up. He takes her by the hand. And the fever leaves her. No more burning fever. Just like that. What Mark said, immediately. No waiting. Not like these fake faith healers today or of yesteryear and even of today, saying you got to wait some time, you got to give me a little money, got to do this, got to do that, and then you'll be healed. Not Jesus.
He demonstrates his authority by his healing power. She's healed just like that. And how do we know she's healed just like that? Because as soon as she's healed, what does she do? She begins serving them. Isn't that something? You're burning with fever. You're dying with a fever. And all of a sudden you don't have it. And then what do? You just lay there? Think. No.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
The same word is like deacon or
yes.
Like it's translated elsewhere, like administration. Like it's interesting like how that word's been translated. It's actually quite fascinating.
Exactly, Jeff. So she gets up and she's serving them. Can you imagine that? You'd be amazed at that. I'm dying with a fever and I'm not any longer. And I can get up and I can serve people. So evening now has come, and look what happens because of verse 28 and because of what they had experienced. When evening came after the sun had set, they bringing to him all who were ill and those who were demon-possessed, and the whole city had gathered at the door. And he healed many who were ill with various diseases and cast out many demons, and he was not permitting the demons to speak. Because they knew who he was. And he wouldn't let them speak. So now we see the close of a busy day. Now to apply this to our lives today, to end their message this morning. I believe that what we need to see is who has ultimate authority. You see, it is who has ultimate authority, not what, not science either. No matter who tells you that they're science, no person is science. But science is not the answer to everything either. It's not the end all of all. Neither is government, neither is mankind, neither is it me, myself, and I. What we need to see who has ultimate authority. And you see, brothers and sisters, that's where our hope is. That's where our hope is. That's where our desire should be, is who has ultimate authority. Who has ultimate authority in our lives? For many people, that who they want to have ultimate authority is me, myself, and I. What it comes down to. Many politicians in that, we know what they want. Is they want authority. They want the power. But in the end run, that's not who should have ultimate authority. Jesus should have ultimate authority. That's what he said. All authority is mine. It's been given to me. And it will be his until he comes back again and he brings all back to conclusion, Alpha and the Omega. He brings it all back together and he says, okay, Father, it's all done. I'm giving you back all the authority. Because authority was granted to him. But one day, Paul tells us this, that one day he's going to give that authority back. But right now it's his. All authority in heaven and on earth is Jesus. Now, I know there's many people who don't like that, but they have to live with that. They have to deal with it. And dealing with it by just ignoring it will not help. Dealing with it by just telling him, You think you have authority? They can think that. But when it comes to the end, all authority is His. They're not going to be able to come to Jesus when He comes back again after they're dead, or even if they're not dead, and say, I know who you are, but this is who I am. And I've got authority over myself. You had no authority. Can you imagine what the Lord's going to say then? Little do they know. They're going to see that authority. I found another quote of my friend Mark Powell. And this is basically, I think, what it comes down to. This is what he said. God is not who you think He is. He is what He says He is. See? That's what people need to get burned into their eyeballs and into their brains. God is not who you think He is. He is what He says He is. That's the ultimate thing. And we do know from what He says that all authority He has given to His Son. See, let's stand, we're going to sing Trust and Obey, because that's where it's all, what it's all about. See? Trust and obey. That's where it's at. Oh, if we could just get others to see that. Who knows? Maybe they might be amazed. And not in the way of the song of Paul McCartney, Baby, I'm Amazed, either.